encourage them in their faith, and we've kind of gone through kind of the middle grades and then the younger group. And this morning, we are excited to encourage those who are in junior and senior high. If I can have the elders come up first. They have purchased some books written by Brother Allen Webster, All the Devil's Apples Have Worms, maybe the greatest title I've ever heard in a book, that'll encourage them in some things. And so all of our young people who have finished 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th grades this past school year, come on up. And this is photo op time right here in the middle of service if you'd like to get a picture of our elders encouraging our junior. We have one so far. I know we have more kids in those grades. Come on up, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grades, if you just finished. There we go. Now we're coming from everywhere. I was thinking Ethan was going to take them all home for a second. Just build his own library, resell them on eBay, do something. I'm grateful that our elders are doing this from time to time. It's a great encouragement to our young people, and we appreciate them for doing that so very much. We know there are some others who aren't here this morning, vacations and other things. And we will have these ready for them. You know, sometimes you just have several things, thank you, they just kind of swirl around your mind all at the same time, and it makes you kind of think, do I need to change some things here and there? And that's the case this morning. The sermon I'm going to preach this morning is not the one I had planned to preach this morning until last week. Some of you know that I plan my sermons out a couple of months in advance, but I'm not totally like I have to preach that no matter what. Sometimes some things just happen where you just decide, you know what, let's just push what I was going to preach down a little bit and we'll get back to it eventually. And that's the case this morning. About four or five things happened all within just a few days of each other that made me want to change what I was talking about this morning. One of those things is that we've been working so much on our Bible school program, and last Saturday we had a work day and a lot of work got done. There's more that's been done this past week. If you haven't seen the pictures, you haven't made the little trek upstairs and seen just some of the work, there's a whole lot more to be done. But those classrooms are looking just fantastic, and a lot of work was done. And then, I don't know if you noticed, but last Sunday, and I don't know what the reason was, but we had a huge number of young people sit down here. We often have a few. We had just a ton. If you looked over here this morning, some are, you know, young at heart, but there's a lot of young people. When I looked over there, that was kind of what the kicker was. I thought, I'm going to change what I'm preaching because of that, but that wasn't it. Because as we prayed about a few minutes ago, as Brother Bryant mentioned at the beginning of our worship as well, we sent 17 young people to West Kentucky Youth Camp. But before they left, I don't know if you noticed that Brother Bryant, representing the elders, met with them and encouraged them. And the pictures of that were just cool. Just this group of young people being encouraged by our elders as they left for camp, and they went and had a great week. And then, inside information, I knew the books were coming, so I knew that was happening. And then I also personally just finished rereading a book. I try to read every couple of years or so. It's written really for youth ministers, but it has to do more with just helping young people and encouraging them in certain ways. And all of that stuff just kind of worked together in my mind. I thought, you know what? What I was going to preach this morning is the truth. I'm going to preach it eventually. But with so much centering around our young people, I wanted to encourage them this morning. I wanted to encourage us to be encouragements to them. We're calling our lesson this morning, Representing Christ as a Young Person. And if you want to turn your Bibles back to that text we read together, can I say it, that Brother Fawn read for us just a few minutes ago, from the latter part of Luke chapter 2, we're going to stay right in that text this morning. If you have your Bible open to Luke chapter 2, we're going to be right there all morning long. Well, not all morning long, that's another hour, but the next 25 minutes or so, we're going to consider this text together. Because if we want our young people to represent Jesus, the best way to do that is to follow His example. And there's not a lot of places in the Bible we can go to find out about the childhood or the youth of Jesus, that youth time in His life. But here it is, in these few verses found near the end of Luke chapter 2. Now I know just a few weeks ago, as we were in our series on the family that ran from just before Mother's Day through Father's Day, that Leo preached on obeying parents. Don't worry, it's not going to be a whole sermon on that. We're going to mention it here and there, but we're going to step back from that. And we're going to look at this text more in total and see some principles that if our young people here would follow consistently, folks, we would be amazed. By the way, I'm already amazed at our young people. I love them. I'm going to mention that again near the end of the lesson too. But if we want them to represent Jesus, the best way to do that is to live like Jesus. And so what do we see about Him in this text? that our young people can emulate and we can help them to emulate in their lives. I want to share with you four things. Number one, I think we can learn from this text that Jesus was respectful of those who taught the Bible. We're told in Luke 2 and verse 41 that Jesus was 12 years old. We have a lot of young people right around that age. By the way, when our young people promote classes in September, do you realize that our 5th and 6th grade class is going to have 16 on the roll? 16 in our 5th and 6th grade class starting in September. So you think about just that age group. That's about the age Jesus would have been. He was 12 at this time. But here is Jesus at that age, that tender age, coming to the temple, seeking out teaching from those who knew the law. We might just simply say who knew the Bible. Now, there's something here for us who are adults before we run to the young people. As a lot of times we read the New Testament where you have these leaders as elites that kind of make all kinds of mistakes. But here in Luke chapter 2, they get it right, don't they? Because how many of us, if a young person, a 12-year-old, a teenager, if they busted into our adult Bible class, would take all the time that they did with Jesus? Because it doesn't seem like he was ready to leave anytime soon. And on top of that, Luke tells us that Jesus is doing a couple of specific things. He's listening to them and asking them questions. Adults, there's an example for us. You got a young person who's asking all the what about this and whys and what about that's and whys and what about this and why and why and why and why and why and why. Not that I've heard that question 1,000 times, but if it has to do with the Bible, should we not take the time to be willing to talk with them and listen to them and encourage them? But then you turn to the example of Jesus, and Luke tells us that he's doing a couple of specific things. First of all, the physician tells us that he was listening, and notice that phrase, he was listening to them. I think there's some significance there. It doesn't say that Jesus picked out a favorite and only listened to that one. He listened to them. He was listening to the entirety of this conversation. He was interacting with the group, if you want to think of it that way. But the word translated listened, or the King James Version has the word hearing, it does mean that, but it also has with it the idea of considering what you're hearing or considering what's coming into the ears. How many young people are sometimes, you know, accused of things going in one ear and out the other? That's not the case with Jesus in Luke chapter 2. He is truly putting forward the effort to listen to what is being said about the Scriptures. And then Luke tells us he's also asking them questions. I don't want to speculate, but it is interesting that here's Jesus, the Son of God, asking questions about the Bible. And so it would seem that Jesus is asking some questions about clarity or to make sure certain things are correct. It would seem he's asking questions that are on track. Young people, please ask questions that are on track. That'd be helpful in your Bible classes. But here he is asking them questions to make sure there's clarity, to make sure there's understanding. When it comes to the Bible, the only question that's not a good question is the one you refuse to ask. Here is Jesus asking questions. The Son of God asking questions. Now tie this back to the concept of respect. Luke lists for us two things that Jesus was doing in the presence of those leaders. Listening and asking questions. There's something conspicuously absent from that two-item list. Telling them what to do. You ever notice that's not there? Or informing them of the new way of doing things. No. Here was a 12-year-old boy who understood that these leaders were taking the time to interact with him. And so he respected them by listening carefully, considering what they said, and asking questions to clarify. Young people, when you're in your Bible classes, that's how you should treat your Bible school teachers. You listen and you ask questions. You ask questions to clarify. When Leo or Drew or whoever else is leading a devotional on Sunday nights and those lessons only take 5 or 10 minutes, they go, well, it's only going to be 5 or 10 minutes and we can have the hot dogs, right? But when they're teaching you something, are you listening to what's being said? When your parents are trying to tell you something about morality or right versus wrong, listen and ask questions. When one of our older members calls you off the side and tries to tell you something from their wisdom, or maybe they correct you because they saw you doing something, listen and ask questions. It's a sign of respect that Jesus respected those who were willing to teach the Scriptures. But I think we also can learn from this text that Jesus knew what He was here for. He knew what He was here for. They find Jesus, of course, in the temple. And Mary, I love Mary in this text, by the way. Why have you treated us this way? I don't know if that's actually how she said it. That's how I read it, okay? But then Jesus turns around and makes that great statement and asks the question, why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Or some translations have, I must be in my Father's house. Now, in that little exchange between Mary and Jesus, there's something that happens that's very important. And it helps us maybe understand something that's said later in the text. Because Mary would say that your father and I were looking for you. And then Jesus turns around his response and says something about being in my Father's house or in about my Father's business. It's the same word in the English and in the original language, father and father. It's the same word. And maybe that's why you then read they didn't really understand what it was he was saying, because Joseph, his earthly father, if you want to think of him that way, he didn't have business in the temple, other than religious business, you know, bringing the sacrifice and so forth. But his business had nothing to do with even the city of Jerusalem, most likely, much less the temple itself. And he, for sure, wasn't the owner of the temple. It wasn't his house. And so Jesus is switching the conversation somewhat to this earthly perspective of looking for him to about my Father's business. We had a sermon some time ago about, you know, what are we here for? What's our life all about? We went through several things. And of course, the conclusion of that was Isaiah 43 and verse 7 tells us that God created us for His glory. That's what we're here for. And that seems to be the same concept that Jesus is bringing forward here even in this statement. Even at this young age, here was the one who understood that his purpose, his business, if you will, was to do what God sent him to do, was to be about what God had him to be about. A lot of young people think their purpose is to make sure they get a great education or to build up some kind of, you know, fame. After all, it's YouTube. To make sure that you have all the, you know, all the popularity or any other certain things. That's fine to a certain level. But your purpose is to glorify God, to grow in faith, to share that faith, and to make sure all you do is to His glory. But I also want to think about, because that phrase can be translated in my Father's house. I don't know the Greek language. Drew can probably, you know, translate this backwards and forwards. But it can mean either one. Whichever translation you have is fine. About my Father's business or in my Father's house, doesn't make any difference. And I know this building or this complex is not the Father's house. This is just a building. It's nice, but it's just a building. But can I make a point of application from that same concept? That if the church is today the house of God, and Paul would tell us it is the household of God, then we need young people to be with God's people. We need young people to be about God's business with God's people. Sometimes here, some of our young people here or their families say, we just don't know anybody else at Central. There's a Sunday night service night in there, Leo. I think we're going to meet tonight. I'm planning on preaching tonight. And after that's a youth devotional. There's your chance. There's your chance. To be among God's people, getting to know one another. If the church is God's house, then be with God's people. Be with them. Be involved in those things that will help you to grow in unity and grow in love with one another. And our young people have all kinds of these summers. I'm not the youth minister and I'm tired. And I even go to camp. I did a couple times, but it's incredible. But Leo and Drew have worked together to put a calendar of all kinds of stuff. Devotionals. We're going to have another Teens in the Word in July, and we'll get back to hopefully the two-a-month schedule, or every other week schedule, I'd say, in the month of August. Be with God's people. Your purpose is to glorify God by being around His people. Jesus understood that. And you see that all the way back in this text. Now, I mentioned Leo talked about this in his sermon a few weeks ago, so we won't spend a whole lot of time on this. But if we're going to be true to the text, we also have to understand this text does tell us that Jesus obeyed his parents. And you think about the fact that Jesus understood somewhat who he was at this point. My Father's house. He understood something. We don't know the depth or the level to which he understood everything at every point in his life. But he understood something about who he was. And so then when you see at the beginning of verse 51 that Jesus went down to Nazareth with his parents and was submissive to them or was subject to them, Man, that adds all kinds of weight to that context, does it not? Because here was the one who understood something of who he was. And yet he obeyed his parents. I think William Barclay in his commentary just absolutely nails it. When he talks about how that knowledge that Jesus had of who he was, Barclay writes something along the lines of that knowledge did not cause Jesus to fail to do what he was supposed to do. He was still obedient to, I think he calls her the gentle Mary and the humble Joseph. I think that's what he calls them, something along those lines. That's it. Here was Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, who knew his Father's business, and yet he goes to Jerusalem and he's submissive to his parents. Now, young people, don't take me wrong, but you're not the Messiah. Okay? But how many young people still get too big for their britches and think that just because they're breathing air, they don't have to follow their parents? But I want you to take that concept of he was submissive or he was subject to them. Because the word there is a very powerful word. It's the same one you'll find later in Paul's writings. He talks about wives being subject or submissive to your husbands. It's the same word. And here's what it means. The idea behind that word is a voluntary choice to place yourself under the authority of another. That's a long definition. But Jesus was not of any less worth than his parents just because he was younger. Young people, you're not of any less worth than your parents just because you're younger. That's one of the reasons Paul could write, "Let no one despise you for your youth." It's not a question of value. It's a question of God-given order. And so God has given the order of parents being in charge of the home. And it's a willing choice to place yourself under their authority. But I also want you to notice that that word, submissive or subject, is a continual word. It does not say Jesus was subject to his parents when they were nice to him. It doesn't say Jesus was subject to his parents when they asked him to do something that he already wanted to do anyway. It doesn't say Jesus was subject to his parents just every so often. No, the idea behind the terminology is that Jesus continually chose to place himself under the authority of his parents. Now, if your parents are asking you to do something that goes against the Word of God, that's a different discussion. Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men. That's a different discussion. But I hate to burst your bubble. Doing chores ain't against the Bible. But I also need to say something along these lines. If your parents are not asking you to do things you know are right, step up. You step up. Mom, Dad, we haven't gone to Sunday night services in years. And I'd kind of like to go to that devotional tonight. Oh, but we just don't go on Sunday night. Then I'm calling Mr. Adam because he'll come get me. I'm calling Mr. Leo, he'll come get me. I'm calling Mr. Drew, he'll come get me. Because I'm going to do what's right. But when it comes to the chores, the tasks, the whatever, Jesus made that choice willingly to obey. That represents Christ in the home, because let's be honest, that stands out from the world around us in a major, major way. But then also, finally, Jesus gave the example by showing true maturity. Everything we know about the youthfulness, if you will, or the growing up years of Jesus is summarized in one verse. Luke 2 and verse 52. I wish we had more. I really do. But that one verse is one that is absolutely powerful, because Luke, the doctor, tells us that Jesus was 12, verse 41. And then as you come into chapter 3, he'll tell us that when Jesus began his ministry, he was about 30 years of age. And then it gives that long list of names that Leo can quote for us, I'm sure, forwards and backwards, but I can't pronounce half the names. But everything else is summarized in that one verse. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. That's the whole 12 to 30-year-old range of the life of Jesus. And we could look at that list of four things and think, well, those things happen naturally. But I want you to go deep with me just for a second. Because the word that the physician Luke used for increased is not a natural word. It's an effort word. Here's what I mean. The word could also mean lengthening. You ever watch somebody, maybe in person, maybe on YouTube, maybe on television, take metal and beat it against an anvil to make a sword, and the sword gets longer as they hit one end and work their way down, that piece of metal gets longer. That's this word. That's the word the Greeks would have used to describe that action. It's also a word that was sometimes used of an army or a search party when they had to go through a path that was covered over with all kinds of, you know, vines and things, and would take, you know, implements, machetes and so forth, and cut their way through to go through that path and down that path, so they lengthened their path. That's this word. That's the word they chose. And so what Luke does when he tells us that Jesus increased in these particular things is saying Jesus put forth effort to go forward in, if you want to think of it that way, these four things. He increased in wisdom, intellectually. But really, we all know, don't we, that wisdom is more than intellect. You can have all kinds of book smarts and be really unwise. You can be a straight-A student and, well, I'm not going there. It does not mean you have to be a straight-A student to get into heaven. Thank goodness. My handwriting grade from fifth grade would keep me out all day long. I wouldn't even, my handwriting now would keep me out for sure. But it doesn't mean you have to be a straight-A student. But it does tell us that Jesus put forth effort to take what He knew intellectually and turn it into wisdom. We don't know what kind of schooling Jesus had or apprenticeship Jesus had. Most likely, He simply apprenticed with His Father and learned the family business. We don't know for certain what that looked like day in and day out. But we do know from that concept that Jesus took what He knew for these growing up years and made the effort to put it forward into wisdom that would help Him in His life. That takes effort. You don't get wise just by getting older. You get wise by putting effort forward to make certain you're turning things into wisdom. And then Jesus increased physically. And of the four, He increased in stature. Of the four, we could say, well, that's the one that does happen most naturally. You grow up, you just grow up. But all of these tie back to that word increased, the effort word. Could it not be that Luke is trying to tell us that Jesus put forth effort to take care of His physical body? We grow up naturally, but we may not increase in stature naturally. It doesn't mean that Jesus was a workout warrior. That's not the point. But that Jesus simply put forward the effort to take care of the body that He had in this life. We could change the sermon if we wanted to at this point and talk about things like, you know, alcohol and illegal drugs, and what makes those things wrong. And it's a long list. You hear them all the time in Bible classes and different things. But I want to suggest to all of us that one of the things that makes stuff like that wrong is that it's treating the body that God has given to us with disrespect. It's not taking care of what God has given us. Jesus, it would seem, put forth the effort to take care of, and if you please, advance the body that God had given to Him. He increased in favor with God. Of the four, that's the most confusing to me. Because how could the Son of God increase in favor with God? The key may be in Philippians chapter 2. We're told that Jesus emptied Himself and became of no reputation, took upon Himself the form of a servant, and so on and so forth, verse 5 through verse 8. It is true, and this is a deeper sermon than I want to get into maybe ever, that when Jesus was here, He was divine and He was human. There's all kinds of argument about how much, and it's a confusing concept. But that whole text in Philippians chapter 2 tells us that something was different about Jesus when He came to this earth. He emptied Himself of something. And so when you come back to Luke chapter 2, and you have that text telling us that Jesus increased in favor with God, there was something that even Jesus had to do to grow in, if you please, spiritual maturity. Now what that looked like, we don't know because the record doesn't tell us specifically. But Jesus put forth the effort to increase in His favor even with God. You don't become spiritually mature just because you have a bunch of birthdays. Don't. You become spiritually mature. You grow in favor with God when you put forth the effort. Young people, don't you want to know God? then put forth the effort to get to know Him. And then Jesus increased in favor with man, with humankind. Some people like to summarize that and say He increased socially. That's a good way of thinking about it. But I like that word favor. Jesus grew in what it meant to present Himself in such a way that people were just drawn to Him in a relational way. Now, not everybody liked what He taught as He was an adult, but they still came to hear Him because there was something about Him that just drew people. That comes with work. That comes with presenting ourselves in a certain way that doesn't just automatically turn people off. It means we dress in a certain way, we look a certain way. Not that we have to have our hairstyle, that's what I'm talking about, but we present ourselves a certain way that draws favor with people and doesn't just automatically push them away. And then when they do engage us, we have grace in our words. We speak kindly. We speak wisdom. Jesus increased in all those things. And you put all that together, you see a sign of true maturity. All of which takes work. None of this happens just because we get older. All of it takes the effort that Jesus would put forward. I love our young people. I love them. I'm thankful that even though I'm the preacher, even before we moved here, the elders asked me, to have a hand in helping with some things. And I'm glad about that. I love, sometimes love leading VB, lads to leaders. Sometimes I love that. I love helping out with that. I love that we host teens in the Word at our house. I love teaching vacation Bible school sometimes. Just kidding. I love these young people. They are filled with talent. They are filled with abilities. And they're good. But there are some cracks that need to be filled. There are some places where our young people still need to work on representing Jesus at all times. I know we've mentioned this a lot lately, but it needs to be said again. We have some young folks that need to put some clothes on. We have some young folks that need to understand what modesty really means. We have some young people who need to understand that when we come to worship, we're here to worship. That even if the sermon's boring, like this morning's, you still pay attention. You still sing the songs that you know and you learn the others and you listen to the prayers. You're not on this thing. Even if you're sitting down here and mom and dad are way over there. We have some young people that need to learn to respect their parents. Not that they're going to always ask you to do what you want to do, but Jesus chose place Himself under the authority of His parents, and He was the Son of God. We have some young people who need to learn to respect their Bible school teachers more. I know it's hard to sit for 45 minutes on a Sunday morning through a class about Ezekiel. I get that. But they're teaching you the Bible. We have some young people who need to learn to welcome others. I've literally debated all week where to say this now. I'm going to. Leo, you may be preaching tonight after all. I don't know. I have watched quite recently. I'll put it generically. I'll say in the last 6 months. It's been more recent than that. And we've had guests here with children, I would guess, 12, 13, 14 years old. And I've watched our age group of that young people walk right by them. Never say a word to that precious child. Oh, please, please, reach out. Step out of your comfort zone. Welcome that teenager. Welcome that young person. I'm not saying these things because I think our young people are bad. Not at all. I'm saying them because I see, right over here and some other places scattered around, a potential unlike any other in this entire building. Every time, I have been around our young people. I've been impressed with something. Sometimes it may seem like a small thing. Sometimes it may seem like a huge thing. But I have always been impressed with something. And if our young people would really put forward what it means to represent Jesus everywhere that they are, I think we would see an absolute explosion in their unity and the church itself. I truly believe that. Very quickly, and I'll extend the word's invitation. One of the things I love most about Central, and I said this from here, I said it probably almost all of you in different conversations, is the diversity, the variety that we have. I mean, one of those is geographical. I love that. I told somebody not long ago that they said, "Now tell us where Paducah is." And I said, "Well, we're over here." And I said, "I don't know, probably a quarter to a third of our members come from Illinois." And they're like, "Wow!" I didn't tell them it was only like 4 miles away. I just had to leave that off. Okay, I love that diversity, but sometimes I'll be honest, that geography works against us a little bit because of the travel. I get that. But families, young people, put forth the effort. Because if we would use that geography to our advantage and have young people representing Christ in Paducah and Metropolis and Vienna and wherever else they happen to be from, let's just say it, the project we're doing over there wouldn't be enough. I truly believe it. In fact, it wouldn't be close to enough. We would be filled with young people looking for something that's been right here all along. They just needed somebody to show it to them. It's easy to extend the word of invitation this morning to our young people, but I want to encourage all of us. Are we all representing Christ wherever we happen to be? We've made the application for our young people this morning, but the fact of the matter is, the point of the lesson is pretty simple, isn't it? We need to represent Jesus everywhere we are. Whether we're at home, whether we're here, whether we're in our families, whether we're at work, or at school, or our neighborhoods, wherever we happen to be, we need to be putting forth the effort to represent Jesus everywhere. And so the only question I've got to ask this morning is, are you doing that? Young people, are you doing it? Not so young people, are we doing it? You need to come to Him this morning for the first time. You need to come to Him again as a Christian and seek forgiveness or encouragement. Whatever you need is, will you come as we stand and sing to encourage you.